Hillary Fordwitz joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, global business consultant at Stelmark, stelmark.com. Welcome to the show. You're on WGN. Hillary, how are you today?
Thank you. Good afternoon to you, John. Yes, very well. Thank you very much.
So what do you do, Hillary? What do you do at Stelmark?
Well, actually, Stelmark, yes, it stands for how you strategically develop the relationships that market your business for you. So I work with lawyers, accountants, architects, engineers, government contractors, anybody who's professional, like finance, real estate, anybody who's absolutely technically brilliant, but the likelihood that they were ever trained in or coached in how to gain and retain clients is really low. Now, we're not talking about sales, but every professional, doesn't matter what they do, every smart professional has to gain and retain a client. In fact, everybody in the world, no matter what they do, has to gain and retain a client, and that's what I coach.
Isn't it funny that a lot of people who are successful in their fields don't know how to be successful in their fields or don't know how to manage the money that they make? Those are all different disciplines, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And the saddest thing is, you know, they used to say like accountants would start an accounting firm because they're really good at accounting. But if you don't have clients, you don't have an accounting firm. If you're a lawyer, if you don't have clients, you don't have a business. So lots of times also, your actual job conflicts with what you have to do. For example, my background was KPMG, 12 years there, headed global business development based out of Amsterdam. And most of my positions were here stateside for a decade. But John, think about this. The very auditor, somebody who's looking at your book, somebody who's looking at you and says, John, like earlier you mentioned you don't want to spend that $8 on Twitter. Oh, maybe you wrote it off and you pretended it was something else. Your accountant has to catch you out on that because you don't want the IRS catching you out on that. So it's very difficult. There are lots of professions like lawyers. They might have to tell their accountant, their client, like a Sam Bankman-Fried, they might have to tell their client, you know, you can't say that. Meanwhile, they've got to keep the client. So it's a very fine balance. That's what I focus on and coach.
I don't have time to talk about the Sam Bankman,
Bankman-Fried.
Story, but his suggestion that it was a labeling issue, I thought was a reminder that he needs to stop talking now. Let's talk
okay,
a little
yeah.
bit about...
He needed to stop talking a long time ago, actually, but yeah, yeah. You're right.
I like the fact that he was. I think oftentimes when a story breaks, whatever it be, a lot of us wish that the person would just tell us their truth, don't lawyer up. But maybe now that he's had his day and has been arrested, he should be a little more circumspect. Since you touch so many different kinds of industries, I'm just wondering what you think about some of the broad economic indexes that we're looking at right now. Are you happy to see what's happened with inflation?
Happy would be no. I'm not happy, and I don't think anybody who's happy about the current economy must be out of their minds. It's a ghastly situation. Now, is it better than what was projected? To a certain degree, John, yes. I mean, the CPI Consumer Price Index, at least for November, it rose less than it was expected. But, I mean, it's still at an elevated 7.1%. I mean, the Federal Reserve is going to begin its meetings in 2 days. So certainly, I mean, it's better, and that might not mean such a high raise in interest rates. But I always go to look what the effects are on average businesses. And I'll never forget something, and I believe it was Alan Greenspan said it. I can't remember who said it, but I think it might have been Alan Greenspan. One of the heads of the Fed, many years ago, maybe 10, 20 years ago, he was asked about what they do at the Fed and the raising of interest rates. And he said something I'll never forget, and all of our listeners should remember this. He said, it's like the Queen Mary. It's a long lag time to make it turn or do anything. And the saddest thing is they keep reacting or not reacting quickly enough to the CPI when it comes out or to immediate indices. But so many things lag, and the consumer sort of lags. Most unfortunately, not everybody's listening to your show right now. A lot of people are working. A lot of people don't read the newspaper, or not many people read newspapers anymore anyway, but they're not paying attention to the news, John. And this is the issue. Their sentiments lag, which is why after 9/11, when George W. Bush stood there with his bullhorn, and then after that, he urged Americans to go out and shop. Everybody was shell-shocked from 9/11. It took a long time for people to go back and shop. My point is, like the Queen Mary, people's sentiment, business sentiment, as well as the actual things we do lag. If you decide right now, because your family's in a dire circumstance, oh my goodness, you have to sell your house, by the time you can do that, there's a long lag time, which is why the CPI is very immediate, but it doesn't take into account longer lagging indices.
we have to go now, but better down a couple percentage points than the same.
Yes.
I mean, maybe the glass isn't half full by your estimation, but we're not going to get back to 2 or 3% if we don't first get to 7% and 6%. That is the direction we're going, right?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And they do say, and I will say, this is the bottom line. Inflation is not transitory. So what Janet Yellen said, and everybody was saying, it is not transitory. It is not going away anytime soon, and it will probably be worse next year.
Boy, if they ever wanted to take a word back, it is that would be the word of the year. Hillary Fordwich is the global business consultant and founder of Strelmark, Strelmark.com. Hillary, we're going to ask you to join us another day. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye now. Cheerio.
Philip Weiss is a regular guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the president of Seyfarth at Work. Philip, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
I don't even know how to say this. Gigplosion? What is that?
Yeah, gigplosion is a term that we've been using with clients. Really, the fulsome term is an inflation gigplosion. I know you've been talking about the fluctuating inflation rate on the show. What we have seen in the last month and a half is the accumulated effect of months of inflation, and we're hoping that's going to ease now, but we're seeing the effects compounded, John, by the need to spend for the holidays. And that's resulted in a surprising and somewhat unique spike in the number of people applying for gig jobs, for side hustles. Some of our clients in the industry that employ or use a lot of these freelancers have told us that up to 80 to 85% of their new applicants have told them, it's the inflation that's causing me to come to you for this side hustle work. Plus, I got to pay for gifts for my family. So it's an interesting perfect storm of months of higher prices plus the holidays.
Are these people that are applying for these jobs or are doing them themselves, these gig workers, are they keeping their other jobs as well?
Yeah, so that's the kind of fascinating aspect of this, or at least one of the fascinating aspects. Back in 2020, we saw all these people applying for gig work because they were laid off. A few months ago, it was the Great Resignation that led to many people looking for alternatives. This is a new and kind of distinct phase of gig work where most people are keeping their jobs but need the extra income. They need that additional stream of revenue because of the holidays and because of inflation. And what's really fascinating is it's really caused some grumbles and gripes among the longer-term, more experienced side hustlers who are referring to their new colleagues as, you know, the green baby newbie troop. Even though a fair number of these recent additions to the gig force are in their 50s and 60s and even older, because it's not an age issue, it's a personal income issue.
So are they packing groceries? Are they driving Uber? What kind of jobs are these people doing?
Yeah, a little bit of all of that and more. So a fair number of delivery. About 20% are getting into all kinds of freelance, being part-time administrative staff, graphic designers, if that's a skill of theirs. And some are simply renting out a room in their house or renting their car to others. So we're seeing all sorts of efforts to engage in a side hustle. And what's really interesting as a result, John, is you might be surprised at who down the street or in your own office is suddenly become a gig worker or side hustler. Just last week, one of our clients, a Midwest beauty supply company, reported an interesting situation where the manager told his longtime assistant, you know, I got to get home right after work today because I got a delivery of a new furniture set. He rushes home. An hour later, the same assistant shows up because his side gig was to deliver the settee and ottoman that his own boss had ordered. So we're seeing a lot of these surprise moments where you encounter someone as a gig worker that you knew in an entirely different context.
Well, there's no shame in working hard. I'm sorry that people have to resort to this to make ends meet. That's a little awkward, that situation. I thought that you would be telling us a little bit about how employers feel about that. How do they feel about their employees working on the side?
Well, that is an important aspect of this sort of third wave of increased gig activity, because a lot of employers, just like a lot of the gig workers, are not used to what they're seeing. And we've got companies coming to us saying, well, can we fully prohibit or restrict this because we want people focused on their work? And the question is, are they or are they not doing what you expect of them? That's question one. And question two, of course, John, is, are they applying and working somewhere that actually isn't the same business as yours?
No.
Are they working for, in essence, a competitor? Those are the kind of questions that could lead an employer to engage in some more legitimate restrictive activity. By and large, though, a lot of laws allow and require employers to allow employees to take side work. The key is it pulling them away from your core mission, and is it creating a conflict of interest?
Yeah, I know there are times where you've got an electrician and you say, well, can you come by on Saturday on your own outside of your electrical contractor to do the job, or a plumber, any tradesman? And sometimes they'll accommodate you, but sometimes they know they shouldn't and don't, because that's just cutting into the company's business. It's an interesting sort of conundrum. Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, seyfarthatwork.com. Philip, let's talk again soon. I always appreciate your stories and wisdom.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, and appreciate the opportunity.
Ted Rossman, a regular guest on the Business Lunch, is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate. Bankrate.com is their website. And Ted, it's that time of year to contemplate tipping. Who do you tip and how much? Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Overall, is tipping up or down this Christmas?
So it's really interesting. The frequency of tipping is up, but the amounts are down, which I found fascinating. So people are more likely to give something to their housekeeper this holiday season, if they have one, or maybe their kid's teacher, their landscaper, their mail carrier, trash collector. These were some of the categories we asked about. More likely to give, perhaps because of inflation. Maybe you realize it's been a tough year for many. You'd like to give something. But then the other side of it is maybe you can't give as much as you would like, or maybe not as much as you gave last year. We found in all of these categories, the median tip is either flat or down from last year.
It's interesting, the categories, too. I left something for a letter carrier, the person that drops my newspaper off. I suppose people do their person that cuts their hair with a year-end extra little check or amount of money in the when they get their hair done. Teachers get cash gifts from families, tips?
That's an interesting one. Many people, my wife used to be a teacher, they may not consider it a tip per se, but maybe more of a holiday gift. I actually think for that category, it's really nice to go in on a group gift with the class. Everybody chips in some money, maybe you buy the teacher a gift card or something like that. Because you're hitting on something that I think is important, which is sometimes tipping can be awkward, or maybe there's this kind of sense of impropriety or awkwardness about, you know, just handing somebody an envelope full of cash. The Postal Service discourages cash tips, as do UPS and FedEx. The Postal Service seems okay with gift cards. UPS and FedEx suggest maybe a basket of snacks or drinks. Although, you know, I do think cash is appreciated. I don't know if people are going to turn it down, even if it's technically against the policy. There's all kinds of oddities with tipping, and I think it's something that gets people confused, and that's one of the reasons we do this project around this time of year.
Wasn't there an Amazon program? They said, tell us to tip your driver, the person that drops your stuff off, and we'll give them a tip. There was $1 million bonus pool, and I guess it was used in like 24 or 48 hours, which makes you think that maybe Jeff Bezos and company could be a little more generous than $1 million for the millions of people that work for them. But that's maybe beside the point. 49% of people with child care providers are planning to tip or gift, up from 41%, according to your report last year. What do you think about that?
I think that's a particularly interesting category because that was the biggest decliner in terms of the median tip.
Really?
Child care providers got a median $50 last year, and this year it's just $25. So this is a classic example of frequency up, amount down. I wonder, besides inflation, which I do think is a dominant theme across finance this year, besides that, I have to think the COVID recovery is part of this as well. I think last year, especially for childcare providers, there may have been a temptation to tip more because it was such a weird year with masks and protocols. And I think a lot of families were just thankful that those places were open and maybe they tipped more as a result. We saw that with some other categories too, including tipping for takeout, and tipping for a lot of services during the pandemic was up, and people kind of felt this civic duty that I think has faded as the virus has gone down, but also as inflation has gone up.
That's an interesting way to put it, a civic duty. I'm still thinking about the child care providers, because if you're going to tip at all, these are the people that are caring for, have more contact hours per day than some parents do with their children. So $50 to me is not a lot, or 25, whatever. I mean, I don't know. What do you give them, 1,000? You're not going to do that. So maybe it's just the gesture and not the amount. But that's kind of you kind of get into this funny math in your head. How valuable is their service? How much should I give them extra? You know.
I think there are a couple important themes in here. One is this whole idea of a year-end tip. Now, we're often talking $20 or something like that. But if you have a really dedicated service provider, like you have a nanny that's with you all the time, mm-hmm. or a weekly housekeeper or hairdresser that you really like, sometimes people suggest tipping up to the cost of one service. So maybe that's a week's pay, a haircut's pay, a nightly babysitting fee. Basically, you double that at the end of the year, and that becomes the holiday tip. So that's part of it. I think the other thing is maybe rank ordering people, which is, who do you really need to tip or want to tip? Like, if you live in an apartment building, not only is it a nice thing to tip the super and the doorman, but it may actually be a little self-serving in a way that may buy you better service next year. So if you can't tip everybody, come up with that priority list.
Yes. Tip the people whose service most benefits you down the road. Nothing wrong with that. It's a tip, for crying out loud. Is it breakdown generationally? Are baby boomers more likely or less likely to tip, et cetera?
Young adults are the best holiday tippers. And I thought that was interesting as well, because in general, you would think maybe young people don't have as much money or they're not as enamored with the whole concept of tipping. But I think on the positive side, people with service industry experience tend to tip better. Yeah. And a lot of today's service industry workers are millennials and Gen Zers. So I think that there is a spillover. They're kind of looking out for their own in a way. We really see this the most with giving extra generous tips for people that you should be tipping throughout the year. So a lot of this, we talked about kind of the one-time tip. But we also see this trend with restaurant wage staff and people like that, that yes, you should be tipping them throughout the year, but some people get extra generous around the holidays. I don't think it's always expected, but I think if you're a regular, it's a nice thing to do. It's something that young adults are the most likely to do.
Yeah, waitresses, they say, are the best tippers to other waitresses. I don't know, maybe they could be a tough crowd too, but that's been my experience. What about Uber and Lyft? What about rideshare drivers? I wonder if they, as gig workers, some of them may consider it their full-time job now. I wonder if they get an extra tip or not.
I don't think people tip them as generously as they should. We've found that only about half of riders always tip for a taxi or rideshare. I feel like that's one that should be pretty universal. I would put a taxi or rideshare alongside a restaurant meal or getting your hair cut. I mean, in my opinion, you should be tipping ideally 20% every time you use one of those services. I don't know if you're necessarily expected to go over and above that around the holidays. Now, maybe if you have a regular driver who you just happen to get a lot, although that's probably less likely with something like a taxi or rideshare, that might come into play more with a regular waitress or the same hairstylist all the time. Yeah. So I don't think for any of those you have to feel obligated to tip extra, but I think you should be tipping as a general custom.
For a rideshare driver, a $25 ride, you're telling me I should give them $30, a $5 tip?
Yeah, that would be 20%. Yeah, I think something like that is an appropriate tip. Yeah.
I'll have to rethink that. I don't use rideshare much anymore. It's virtually ever at all, hardly at all. But that's just another number to calculate. All right, nice to talk to you. Very interesting stuff. Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst. You can read this stuff at Bankrate.com. Thank you, Ted.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A top executive at Stellantis says its Belvedere assembly plant, which will be idled early next year, could still have a future. COO Mark Stewart says the company is continuing to look at what could be done to repurpose the facility. Production will end at the plant next February with layoffs of hourly and salaried workers. The idling will last at least 6 months. Stellantis blames several factors for the shutdown, including the COVID pandemic, the global microchip shortage, and increased costs related to developing and building electric vehicles. The plant builds the Jeep Cherokee. Chicago-based United Airlines will buy 100 Boeing 787 Dreamliners with options to purchase 100 more. United says the order for the wide-body jetliners is the biggest ever for a U.S. carrier. The planes carry more passengers and are generally used for long-haul international routes. United says the $30 billion order will replace planes that are close to retirement age. They'll also expand the airline's global reach. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, where are the markets now, Bob?
Sponsored by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. They are in the green. Dow up 0.3%, 114 points, 34,119. The S&P 500 up 0.75%, that's 30 points at 4020. And NASDAQ's up 1%, 110 points at 11,254.
And now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience live in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. It's day two of our How to Cook Your Prime Rib at Home Like a Pro report with guest chef Eddie Sweeney of Catch 35. Yesterday, Eddie gave us the selection basics.
You want to go with primer choice.
And the cooking temperature for medium rare.
You want to pull it out when it's at 125 degrees.
Portobello mushrooms sautéed in garlic and butter make a nice topping, followed by the demi-glace.
That is a fancy name for thickened beef au jus.
To make that, he takes the roast out of the pan and with the veggies that were on the bottom.
I add a couple hits of Maker's Mark, a little bit of red wine, deglaze it, get all those little the bits off the bottom of the pan. Then I add some beef stock to that, thicken it, kind of just let it simmer on top of the stove. Smash up those garlic bulbs that you had in there. Smash up some of that onion and all the roasted vegetable. And then I strain it all out with a fine mesh strainer.
And you got to have horseradish, right?
So I just do some fresh prepared horseradish, some mayo, thin it out with a little bit of heavy cream, a couple dashes of Worcestershire, some fresh cracked black pepper, and that's it.
How about sides? Any recommendations?
I mean, the classic is mashed potatoes, some sort of potatoes. Some people like to make Yorkshire puddings out of the beef fat.
And by the way, if mashed potatoes is a must for your table, thousands of our listeners enjoy the stress-free Thanksgiving recipe of our make-ahead mashed potatoes, which you can find at WGNradio.com. Search mashed potatoes. Oh, and one of the best things about holiday meals? Leftovers.
We do a prime rib and potato hash the next day with some eggs. Cut up the prime rib, add some red potato, add some onion, some mushrooms, some roasted garlic. Saute that in a pan till it gets nice and crispy. Flip it over, get the other side crispy. Fry up some eggs, put them on the top of that with some toast on the side.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to Chef Eddie Sweeney of Catch 35 for those tips, which you can read on the Business of Food page at WGNradio.com. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Felicia Bolton is the Director of Communications and Public Relations at Navy Pier. NavyPier.org is the website for a lot of stuff. So let's just let's sprint through this, shall we, Felicia?
Yeah, we can get through it. And the correct term is a lot of stuff. There's a whole bunch of events and programs always happening here at Navy Pier, that's for sure.
And you guys started this around Thanksgiving time, and the things we're going to describe go through January 7th. In general, what's the big star attraction? What's going on at Navy Pier?
Yeah, one of our main events that we have this year is called Light Up the Lake. I know a lot of people love Winter Wonderfest. We get it. We love it. But, you know, since COVID, it's been a better opportunity to do Light the Lake. It spreads things out a little bit more. There's less touching and interaction. But what's really cool about Light the Lake is that your ticket includes a centennial wheel ride, It also includes ice skating, and it's all indoors. And the ice skating includes as much rink time as you want for that day, as well as rentals included. Light of the Lake also has really wonderful food vendors that we have there. You can go and get a funnel cake, or you can get tacos from Bar Soul, or nachos, or stop by the Elf Eatery and have different types of snacks. It's just a really wonderful experience for the entire family to really enjoy.
Tell me what the Stomp Light is.
I know, that's a big question that we get a lot. So one thing that we did add to Light the Lake this year were interactive activities that kids and adults alike can participate in. Stomp Light activity is a collection of more than 100 interactive light discs, and it creates a really engaging experience for all ages. You stand on it, and it changes different colors, and you can run through it and make a game out of it. The other one that we have that's really cool is called Rozo. It's pretty amazing. It looks like something from outer space. But I love watching people get on it, and you race to the very top, and you hold on to it, and all the colors change on this beam, and then the winner will be seen at the top with the color. So if you're blue, you want to be to the top. If you're yellow, you want to get to the top. So it's really cool to see families interact with that.
That's where you kind of walk through an area of, like, colored reeds, and do you touch them or something like that?
All the above. It is so hard to describe with words. It's something that you just really have to come in person to see and experience. But yes, it is interactive. And so you get with a group of three people, or you can even play it by yourself if that's what you prefer. And you just stand on it. You can use your hands. You can just use your feet if you're more comfortable with that. And the faster you move your feet, the faster you win at the very top. And it makes all these sounds and music. It's really, really cool. And the other thing that we have that I really love is our magic wands. So all of our art displays, most of our holiday displays, have this purple box that's right next to it. And if you tap your magic wand, you can change the colors of the display that you're looking at. We're talking about a giant Rudolph, and his nose will turn red, or one of our huge globes, ornament globes, and then you can change the colors inside. Even if you leave Light of the Lake, we have 15 different locations of Christmas trees all throughout the pier, and you can change the lights on those Christmas trees with your magic wand.
So you've got light sculptures, an ice skating rink, Santa's house, the centennial wheel. The hours are Monday through Thursday, 3 to 9. This is until December 20th. The hours change a little bit after the 21st, but Friday and Saturday, 11 to 10 p.m., Sundays, 11 to 7 p.m. You make it sound like kind of one ticket price to get on and do most of these things?
Yeah, that's what's so beautiful about Navy Pier, is that when you do come here, it can be one ticket for something, but you experience dozens of different things. And that one ticket to Light of the Lake does include the ice skating rink, like we mentioned, the Centennial Wheel ride, the train ride. You get to see Santa, take pictures with Santa. He'll be here, write letters to him as well, see the light display, enjoy some food. And then we also have different activities that take place every single weekend. We have something that's different. But this weekend included, we do have something with Netflix that's going to be really amazing. It's just announced, so you guys are the first ones to break it. But Netflix will have a pop-up experience taking place this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be super cool. It's called Wondrous Everywhere, and it's going to be a festive photo op that's going to take place at Light of the Lake. So it'll be here December 17th from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and then Sunday, December 18th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And people can take photos for their family holiday card if they want.
And is the pop-up a pop-up of a Netflix show or just a holiday-themed display?
It's a little bit of both. Netflix is like, it's talking a little bit more about it. So Netflix movies and shows are all about the wonder of this time of the year. So we know that Netflix is kind of like the new quote-unquote Hallmark, right? They're always doing these really cool, like, Christmas-type stories that come out. And so although it's not connected to one particular movie or show, like we had Matilda the weekend before, this one is more of an experience that's really connected to all of the Netflix Christmas type events.
Felicia Bolton is the Director of Communications and Public Relations over at Navy Pier. You can find out all of this and the cost for the tickets and everything like that at navypier.org. Felicia, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.